Hello everyone, welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. This is me, Anna Ingham, and Pete Yates. We're having one of our walks down the Wolverhampton Canals. And last night, just before my class, I was having an imaginary conversation with a student where the student had asked me, what's the difference between focus and awareness? So I had a long conversation in my head while I was waiting by the front door for everyone to turn up for their class. And secretly hoping maybe somebody would ask me this question, but of course nobody did. So I thought we could just discuss this as we were having our walk today. It's a very lovely day. So as we've been getting down to the track, we were discussing this question. So so if someone was to ask you this question, a yoga student, Pete, what would you say? Difference between focus and awareness, and is there any?
Yeah, lots of things. But awareness is one of those terms that's really hard to get a grasp on.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Whether we're looking for definitions or characterizations or descriptions, at the same time we all know what we mean.
Yeah.
Similarly with consciousness, and it's a big preoccupation of philosophers in the current age, consciousness, and they do kind of flail around somewhat. I like to add, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is some movement forward in that respect. But if you study it, it just makes you realise just how tricky it is and difficult. Same time, we know what we mean. I say I am aware of the birds singing. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
So,
but I haven't asked this before. You know, yeah. What is awareness? And somebody threw it out at me. This did stump me a bit at the time.
Yeah.
But of course, they want something that's going to give them more of a handle. That's going to be helpful for them within their yoga practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh well, we're on safer territory there.
Yeah.
I think.
More specifically for you. You yoga practitioner on the mat.
Yeah. Well, awareness is certainly a term I use quite a lot, and focus is a term I use quite a lot.
Yeah, me too.
They're not the same things. Awareness can be focused, but also awareness can be without focus. It can be what I call spacious. And I would distinguish at least three styles of awareness that you can observe in your life. These are things that we can just through some simple acts of observation can agree about, I think.
Yeah.
There's a kind of dissipated awareness or a dim awareness. And what I'd say about that is that it's when awareness isn't functioning properly.
Yeah.
Well, what is it for awareness to function? Well, it needs to serve the animal. I can't put it very crudely like that. I mean, our awareness has got a great practical and survival value to human beings.
That just helps us with our daily functioning.
Everything.
Cooking the dinner.
Everything.
Taking the kids to school.
Everything. And but it's possible for it to function optimally in terms of the good of the animal. But it can also function not so well. It can be dim. It can be deluded, actually.
Yeah.
It can, and that's to do with the contents of the awareness. And it can be kind of shattered and fragmented. So it loses any kind of practical value that it's got. It's like having a broken leg or something. You can have a kind of a fragmented awareness.
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about that too much. The other two styles, I would say, are focused awareness and spacious awareness, which I mentioned, haven't I?
Yeah.
And in yoga practice, those are the two modes of awareness that are our basic instruments for practice.
Yeah.
I mean, yoga is an investigation. Yoga is an inquiry. Yoga is, to some extent, an experiment for each individual undertaking. And these awareness states, focused and spacious, are like the microscope and the Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah.
Of yoga inquiry.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Focused awareness is spoken about by Patanjali, and he calls it Samyama. And you're familiar with this, aren't you? Samyama means complete discipline, roughly speaking. And technically it consists of the last three of the eight limbs of yoga, of the Ashtanga yoga that's given in the second and third chapters of the Yoga Sutra.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, one focuses one's awareness on an object, on an object of inquiry. And that object can be pretty well anything. It could be external, it can be internal. It can be, say, for instance, the flow of the breath. Or the sensations in the heart.
Going over the bridge there.
Yeah, the sensations in the heart at all. It can be a matter of listening to the external sounds around one, the birdsong and the traffic and all the rest of it. But the point is that the awareness stays on the object. If it drifts away from the object into reverie, fantasy, or just thinking about some other object, it's drawn back, it comes back. And that's the concentration phase, that's dharana, the concentration phase of these three aspects of samyama. I do. Secondly, it becomes fairly easy after a bit of practice, and you find even a fairly unruly mind can be kind of trained a little bit in this respect, that it will stay on an object for quite a while. And it can become second nature. You practice a lot, you do a lot of yoga, your awareness will stay on an object. But, you know, give or take, I think perfecting it's probably not even necessary, but it's a tall order, given the nature of the human mind. And people call it monkey mind and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it jumps around. The third phase, samadhi, is when the subject, you, the bearer of the awareness, sort of,
yeah.
And the object become merged. And in that that's samadhi, the third of the three limbs of samyama. The second, by the way, is dhyana, which just translates as meditation. The third, samadhi, is when there is no effort needed to keep the focus, to the extent that the subject and the object become one thing. They sort of melt into each other. And this is supposed to be a process that imparts knowledge as well, or wisdom. Knowledge of the object, or even some kind of wisdom. If the object of samyama is simply the flow of life itself, this focused awareness leads to a samadhi in which the flow of life is one. It's not fragmented into an observer and an observed. It's not fragmented into a subject and an object.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is an easeful state.
Yeah.
And it's a spacious awareness, because the object is the flow of life itself, which is this enormous spacious phenomenon.
Yeah.
No special awareness in that state. So samyama is a case of a focused awareness gradually becoming, I don't know about gradually, but eventually or something, becoming, through the process of samyama, spacious awareness. Now in the kind of yoga kind of teaching that I do, I use yoga postures, including sitting in half lotus or easy posture or siddha posture or lotus posture or hero posture. I use a sitting posture, and I find to do that, to instruct that. All right. Yes, thanks.
It's passing someone we know in the they call dog field out here.
Yeah. So, where was I? Yeah, sitting posture. Yeah. And I don't actually make this distinction that a sitting posture is any different from a triangle posture or a headstand posture or a lion posture or any of these things. It's just, it's again, it's another yoga posture. It's one we can hold for quite a long time, perhaps. You know, so this kind of popular and erroneous distinction, is it yoga or is it meditation? It's just like, it's just crap. All yoga is meditation.
Yeah. And we get asked this question on the phone about 10 times a day.
Yeah, yeah. So in your sitting posture, it strikes me that you've got a technical phase and a contemplative phase. And the technical phase is when you actually make sure you're doing the posture right. So that it will become easy. So it will become the sthiram sukham, as Patanjali says, you know, steady and easy.
Yeah.
Steady and actually enjoyable. You know, enjoyable, easy, steady.
And then this phase doesn't last for too long, because once you do
hopefully, technically proficient, then
you know,
hopefully.
It is easy.
I would hope so.
Or easy in the sense of you don't have to concentrate where to put your foot and that sort of thing. And you become...
Well, anything you practice will
fluent.
Be... Anything you practice that's not too difficult will become second nature.
Yeah.
Just like riding a bike and this kind of stuff. So what I wanted to say about that, let's just... So you can see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about this sitting posture. Obviously, the first thing is you make sure you got it right. What does that mean? It means that you get it so you can sit there. You get it so that it's comfy. And that entails using a focused awareness to check that the main points of the posture are as they should be, if it's going to deliver some sense of ease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not kind of giving you crippling back pain or anything like that.
Yeah, and this phase, I think, as I said, it uses a series of focuses, and these are in a sense are like samyamas, because awareness is drawn to a focus. They don't go all the way with the samyama particularly. But nevertheless, the awareness is drawn into a laser beam style of focus, and you check your legs. Your legs are okay. You check that your belly's relaxed. You check that you're not gritting your teeth. Or hunching your shoulders or furrowing your brow. You pay some attention to the breath so that it just automatically kind of settles down into a natural and easeful pace and rhythm.
Yeah.
And all of that uses a focused awareness in a series. And learning the posture is learning the series of focus awarenesses that you need to bring to bear on any particular posture just to get it good enough.
What do you mean by good enough?
Good enough for it to deliver spacious awareness to you.
Yeah.
Because what I'm saying is that all this checking and using your focused awareness is doing. It's kind of a bit busy, and therefore it's a bit noisy. It's a bit noisy. Remember, yoga, we wouldn't mind having some peace somewhere in it all, but here we are doing this thing that's creating noise inside us. It's quite busy, it's quite noisy, it's quite procedural, it's quite technical.
Yeah.
And also, pulling the awareness into focus takes effort.
Yeah.
Now, in the technical samyama of concentration, meditation and then contemplation, the effort gets less.
Yeah.
This is recognised by Patanjali, that we kind of lessen the effort.
Yeah.
To lessen the noise of effort, to allow the grandeur and joy of peace to come forward.
Yeah.
And remember, we've already got this stuff. Remember, this whole game is about contacting something you've got. It's not about creating something.
Yeah.
It's about contacting something that you've got.
Well, discovering what you already have.
It's discovery, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the role of focused awareness, is getting the posture right. So that once you've got the posture right, you can drop it. You can drop the effort.
Yeah.
Then awareness becomes spacious.
Yeah.
And it has no special focus, because it takes in everything equally. It takes in the birdsong. It takes in the slight pain in your big toe. It takes in maybe the little shadow of anxiety around your exam results right there at the back of your brain. It's indiscriminate. It doesn't discriminate particularly.
Yeah.
It's open. It's spacious. It's sparkly. If you're not wasting energy on battling with a yoga posture, like you have to with the really complicated ones, however good you get.
Yeah.
You find that there's a lot of sparkle in your field of awareness, as the pretty well as outlined in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, that this pure awareness, this pure spacious awareness, has this massive sparkle.
Yeah.
That actually kind of scares us a bit very often.
Yeah.
And people deflect from it simply because it's too bright. It's too much.
Yeah.
It
certainly be very intense.
It can be intense, yeah.
Yeah.
But the point about it is, it's effortless.
Yeah.
It's effortless because you've stopped the doing of using the focus to check your yoga posture, which might be sitting, might be triangle, might be fairly dynamic, might be kind of quite passive, like corpse posture. Doesn't matter. Just doing a yoga posture. It's all I do with people, just a few yoga postures.
Yeah. And just to mention something that we were talking about before, about the when you're doing your yoga or when you go to a yoga class, sometimes I see students, they do a posture and they're all nicely focused and aware, you know, lots of awareness going on. And then when we change to another posture, it's like you can just see their awareness just drop and they kind of go, okay, done that one right next.
Yeah.
But, you know, just kind of, and that's like a little bit disappointing because the hope is that the awareness will continue, that like that flow of awareness will continue throughout the whole class.
I actually remind people that the moving part is as important as and significant as the still part.
Yeah, I try and put that in quite a lot as well.
Yeah, move with awareness, you know.
Yeah. So even you know, sometimes people have to, if a posture is uncomfortable for them, and we would say, okay, leave this one out, or if they're pregnant or something.
Yeah.
But in that, just the like that simple waiting or standing or resting, the awareness hopefully would still be there in just the same intensity and just as brightly as when they were actually doing a posture.
Exactly, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah. Because there really is no difference. I mean, and that's the whole point of what we're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like there's no difference really in this sparkling awareness of life between doing a posture and not doing a posture.
Yeah, well, precisely, you know. They're almost like an excuse, the postures.
Yeah.
I mean, they're great. I love it, you know, and I don't want to get like at one of these anti hatha yoga snobs or anything like that. It's just I love it, but everything's significant, you know, ultimately.
Yeah.
So anyway, just recapping there, I'm saying we are using the way we approach yoga practice, and what we share with people. We approach it with a toolkit, which has got two useful tools in it. One of which is focused awareness, which you use to correct a yoga posture, and that's like your microscope. It focuses in and down into a small area. When you do a yoga posture, you go through a series of focused awarenesses in order to just simply technically establish the yoga posture. And the second is your Large Hadron Collider, is the spacious awareness. And the spacious awareness is where the goodies are lurking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing to say about it is it's easeful. There's no effort. We're relinquishing effort. It's not technical. Because it's and again, the Tibetan say, you know, the natural mind, obviously a loaded phrase, but you can see what they're trying to get at with the phrase like that. Yeah, it's easeful, it's sparkly, it's bright, it's expansive. And they say, well, spacious awareness. Well, how spacious is spacious? Well, how big is the universe? You know, it kind of really is this easeful, expansive feeling. And it's also a kind of, it's also a sensitivity. You know, because we're not desensitising ourselves with loads of clamorous effort and loads of ambition. Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
We're allowing the sensitivity of the pristine, spacious awareness to operate. And so I say, with the yoga posture, we move from a series of focused awarenesses to spacious awareness. The spacious awareness dawns when we've got the posture together and we drop. We've done what we need to do to get it right. Then we drop that and then experience the thing
yeah.
in a sensitive way. In an open way, without too much clamorous doing. I mean, it might mean that the posture actually kind of slips a little bit. You know, it becomes a bit sloppy or something. I mean, ultimately, none of this stuff matters. You know, but the sensitivity of a spacious awareness is such that that you can't fail to notice, and it'll just correct. And again, with practice, of course, stuff becomes second nature. You're kind of putting all the instructions down in the machine code of the nervous system.
Yeah.
So it just deals with it. Like riding a bike or swimming. You know, it just this is why practice. This is where practice makes sense. Is that you get this second nature competence with sitting or doing a triangle or doing a headstand or whatever. You get this second nature competence.
And this is why self-practice is so important.
Oh yeah.
And I try and encourage people as much as possible, because it's great going to a class.
Yeah.
But I in my experience, it's a completely different thing doing your own practice.
Of course.
And if you really want to get fluent, that's what you have to do.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
If you go to a directed class every day of the week, you will not get that same fluency that you get when you're in charge.
Well, this is your chance to get your fluency, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is your... Plus, you can find your natural rhythms. You know, it might be that you're very ready for spacious awareness. You're really kind of digging it, you know, and you might want to stay there longer.
Yeah.
Than
in a directed class, yeah.
Or
into your corpse posture.
Yeah.
And you know, say in our classes, we normally do say about 20 minutes to half an hour at the end.
Yeah.
But sometimes when I've done it myself,
no,
I'm only just getting into it after half an hour.
Yeah.
And I'll be there maybe for 2 hours.
Well, the point of a class like that is to give people the pointers and the equipment, you know, to go away with and make their own. Because there are going to be individual variations, individual styles, individual limitations, etc. But you give them the kit, and obviously you have a group of people, and you have to work with that group.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I mean, there are advantages in that as well. I mean, for a start, you go to a class to kind of to hear what somebody who's more experienced than you has got to say about it.
Yeah.
And to taste that, you know, because they kind of will run you through some stuff and you'll taste it, in a sense, kind of fairly directly. So it's like that. But also there is a sort of a push that you get from a group. There's like a collective energy that seems to accrue that kind of gives you a push and an encouragement with a bit of luck.
Yeah.
There is a lot to be said for both. You need both, really.
Yeah.
Unless you're one of these people who walks down the canal one day, sees the sun shining on the Ripley water and your mind blows and it's all over.
Yeah.
You might be one of them. Well, good luck to you. And
yeah.
Take care out there and do good.
Yeah. And just something to, just a little story just to mention, which is connected to awareness, but I always find myself amazed when I remember this, because this was many years ago, and I'd injured my foot,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed to have healed, but I was still getting a lot of pain every time. I got a stabbing pain through the top of my foot every time I put my foot down. So I tried doing some walking meditation and sending my awareness into different parts of my body. So obviously, first of all, I started with the foot and the placing of the feet and the legs and working up. And then I directed all my focus and my awareness into my belly, into the stomach muscles, and went really deep in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a little area that was quite tight. And as I was walking, I relaxed it, and instantly the pain in the foot went.
Yeah.
And this always amazes me.
Yeah.
And now this is because I'm very interested in the body, because I'm a therapist and everything.
Yeah.
You know, to understand that connection between how my my gait was changed by this little bit of tension in my belly.
Yeah.
Was a real eye opener for me.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I stopped, I allowed that tension to come back.
Yeah.
Instantly the foot pain was back.
Yeah.
And it's not like a little bit of foot pain that you might imagine that it's gone.
Yeah.
It was very, very definite.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really made me understand more deeply how simply sending your awareness to somewhere and allowing it to relax in the in the heat of your awareness. Can alter so many things.
Yeah.
Because I never imagined that could happen until I actually just experimented and tried it. And this again is an encouragement to people to not just stick with the formalized, this is what my teacher says, so I'm going to do this, but to play with it, move your awareness around, try different ways of meditating, sort of like, almost like intuitively, just allow yourself to just have a play.
Yeah.
Don't feel restricted by it, because can discover really amazing things when you do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that focused awareness has got this kind of tremendous therapeutic power.
Yeah.
Just in terms of pain in the body, but also psychologically, I'd mention as well. Well, I do. You might find inside yourself, I don't know, like a little corner of I don't know what, say sadness or something like that.
Yeah.
That's not very nice. It's lowering your quality of life. It's not helping you to focus on your yoga. It's standing in the way of allowing any spacious awareness to emerge. It's a pain in the arse, just generally.
Yeah.
And you can focus again in that same way.
And you can be completely unaware of it until you start voyaging your awareness inside yourself.
Yeah, it can be quite dim as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that are kind of repressed or tucked away in dark corners do become a bit more apparent when you're playing around with focused awareness, even just through the simple practices of easy yoga postures.
Yeah.
Bring stuff to light like that.
Yeah.
And it does have amazing therapeutic power. I mean, what you do is if you do a full samyama on that little dark corner of sadness, you become the sadness, you go the whole way to the samadhi of knowing the sadness by identity with it.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of process that resolves things.
It does. I call that one going into the eye of the storm.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it is almost magical in its effect. In fact, but you can use it with stuff you think there's no way this is shifting. You might be thinking, I need an operation. But surprisingly, it is immensely powerful.
Yeah.
This is not quite the kind of yoga use of it, it's a kind of therapeutic use of it. But you're going to encounter it, in most cases, we've all got these little bits of intractable shit.
Yeah. To be able to become, to become at ease with spacious awareness, I think these little dark corners and these little whirlpools and blockages do need to be resolved.
Well, it helps. I actually think, and I reflect, the more I reflect on this, that it's not totally necessary to be completely, absolutely healthy and fit psychologically or physically, whatever that means.
No. To
move from through simple hatha yoga postures or simple sitting, which is only performing a hatha yoga posture, to move quite quickly to spacious awareness.
Yeah.
Because spacious awareness is the natural mind. It's the mind when it's completely relaxed.
Yeah.
It's the field of awareness when it's got no tension in it.
Yeah.
Pulling and focusing introduces a bit of tension.
Yeah.
And I would warn against getting into a primal rut where or a therapeutic rut. You know, where you become so obsessed with all the little scars and scabs that you've picked up through a lifetime, and thinking, oh, well, I can't do this until I resolve that.
Yeah.
And actually, it's wrong. You can. You can go straight to spacious awareness and be a cripple. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I can't use a politically incorrect word like that.
And whilst I completely agree with everything you just said, again, just drawing from my own experience, it's like sometimes I can feel that there's a blockage inside, and I know that I need to go and meet it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
sometimes.
When I do, after, like, once it's almost like it becomes a doorway into spacious awareness.
Yeah. Well, it will.
But I know that I have to go into it.
Yeah.
For me, I'm going to move beyond it.
Yeah, some things you definitely have to deal with.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful. I mean, I see kind of loads of people.
You can't get too precious about it.
They never get out the primal rut.
Yeah. No, but you see, all of these things are useful. If you do go and engage with your dark corners.
Yeah. I would say that focused awareness is amazingly useful. If you're going to paint a picture or write a poem, or write a business plan, I don't know what, or get yourself a really nice crop of organic carrots, you need some focused awareness.
Yeah.
Right down at that level, it's great. It's great that we can do that, that we can pull our interest into a detail of life and experience and existence. But at the same time, it's a great blessing to be able to release awareness into its full spacious openness and sensitivity. Also, and that spacious awareness, you know, it's a funny thing, because it is kind of fertile. It's kind of empty, but kind of fertile.
Oh yeah.
You know, and
see, people get the wrong idea when you talk about emptiness. They just think it's just like a bit of a barren wasteland.
No,
but it's not, is it?
This is something that's so kind of like sparkly.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so my effort with yoga is to point to the spacious awareness, to minimise technicality, because it's very easy to get obsessed with it, and B, for those technicalities to be so difficult that you just spend your whole life on the technicality. But really, you want to be there as pretty quickly, you know. And given that this thing, this spacious awareness, is your birthright. And it's the ground of your being.
Yeah.
What are you fannying around?
Yeah.
Being over technical and over obsessed and over geeky about kneecaps and toes and breath and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And you're suffering. Human beings suffer.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, right, we know that. And then let's get on. So, there's a ramification in all that for me, certainly, in the way I kind of structure a class and the ingredients I bring to bear on it. And I use simple yoga postures that most people in average kind of health can master quickly, because they're not overly technical. And the symmetrical postures are actually a bit easier than the ones where, you know, you've got a left side and a right side, because you don't have to worry about timing.
Yeah.
And even in the effort on both sides, so you're not creating imbalances or aggravating already existent imbalances in the body between the left and the right sides and so on. So I keep it simple. Some of the really difficult yoga postures, which look great in photographs, will never ever let you be quiet.
Yeah.
They're too complicated.
Yeah, don't be seduced by the glossy yoga pictures in all them magazines, mateys.
You know, So for me, I keep it simple. I dispose of the technicalities thoroughly, but quickly, because simple postures don't have many technicalities, and direct students' awareness to what's actually happening in an open and sensitive way. And that kind of happens when you finish with the focusing. Yeah. Of course, with a bit, again, I'm just repeating myself here, but with a bit of practice, you're going to do standing forward bend. It might take me a minute to talk through the technicality. Somebody who's done it a few times or a few hundred times, it'll be second nature. And even if they need to consciously do it, they establish the posture in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And then they can experience the posture.
Yeah.
With the sensitivity of a spacious awareness, and that spacious awareness can then just develop and start to intrude in the life, or you might say, or operate in the life, because as I say, it's immensely fertile. Because it's beautiful, it's very beautiful.
Yeah.